time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Again, I highly encourage college football to not try to stage a playoff, fire all their coaches, have their signing day, and have free agency at the exact same time.
Pete Thamel.
They not only lost, but they got taunted, and Coach Prime took the spear and the horse and rode it back to Jackson.
With SI's Pat Forty.
I mean, right now, it's like, oh, well, that's not the way we interpreted the rules, so we just gave everybody, you know, $250,000. So, oh, sorry. We'll work on doing it differently next time.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Coach Prime. Prime time. Neon Dion. Man had a lot of nicknames. One more interception out of Deion Sanders. One more career interception. Last minute, arguably the greatest, most unexpected flip in signing day history. And some of us are fans of signing day.
That's a lot of history. A lot of flips, a lot of crazy stuff. A
lot of flips, a lot of back deals, a lot of side deals, a lot of last minute, midnight. What they used to call Jared Tarkanian used to call Lute Olson, midnight loot.
Midnight loot.
Yep. Midnight loot. That was basketball, but. When Tark is tipping your hat to how you snuck one by him, that's like an old gunslinger, you know, respect. Pretty incredible. Travis Hunter committed to Florida State for months. Number one recruit in the country. 6'1". Defensive back slash wide receiver slash athlete slash running back. Whatever you want out of Travis Hunter in the suburbs of Atlanta, this dude can do it. His highlight reel on YouTube is a lot of fun. It's just not fair. And at the last minute, middle of the day, he announces his flip. Word breaks, and then he has a little press conference on Instagram Live. Flips from Florida State to Jackson State. He tosses away an Auburn hat, tosses away a Florida State hat. He puts a Georgia one on, but then throws that away. Then his buddy throws him, and it's a pretty nice catch. You can see where the athleticism is. That's really where you see it. You don't want a defensive back who can't pull off the hat game at the announcement.
Hey, he's a good receiver too, Dan. All right.
I know. Yeah. This is why he's number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he's only 4-star, he drops that thing. And you go, whatever. Pat Forty. Stunner. Yes. There's historical significance. There's everything. And HBCU is involved. The number one player in the country is not playing at essentially Division One. He's playing like the next. He's not even bothering with the highest level of football. Incredible.
It is incredible. But this is, you know what, Jackson State and people at HBCUs were dreaming of when you get Deion Sanders to be your coach. And the guy you just described sounds a lot like a young Deion Sanders. I mean, we'll see if he's going to be anywhere near that good, because that's setting a serious bar. But DB, receiver, running back, whatever, return kicks, you know, superior athlete who can do whatever. I can't say he's the best player to go to an HBCU since before black players could go to white colleges, but this is a landmark thing. I mean, probably maybe the best since Steve McNair. I don't really know.
He can't be a higher rated recruit. He
can't be
one.
A higher rated recruit. Cannot be. I mean, and yeah, you don't want, I guess I shouldn't put expectation on him to be an NFL great yet, but just for Jackson State to get this guy and for Deion Sanders to get this guy is a potential game changer. I mean, it is wild. We saw a top recruit go to Howard in basketball. Then I think he ended up not even playing there, but that was considered this, you know, game changing thing, but it's different in basketball from football. And to go
and he
there.
He wasn't number one.
No, he wasn't number one. He was not number one. And, you know, Howard is again, could eventually play against Gonzaga and Duke and stuff. I mean, at Jackson State, you're not playing for a national championship against Alabama and Georgia and whoever else. So, wow.
They don't even enter the 1AA or the FCS playoffs.
Right. No, they go play
in
the
Celebration
Bowl.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Like, I actually donate money through Sekou Smith, who's a great friend of mine and a great NBA yes. journalist.
Yes.
And he passed away of COVID, sadly. I wish he was here because, oh boy, he would have been crowing today. But he went to Jackson State, also a big Michigan fan. And so I actually donate to Jackson State in Sekou's name. And so I get Jackson State emails. And literally 1 minute after this kid committed, there was an email. Celebration Bowl tickets. It's basically the only, that's one of the only schools I'm technically a booster of, right?
Yeah. I was laughing. No, it's wild. I mean, I never thought we would see this kind of a flip, you know, but fantastic. I mean, very, very exciting just to see what can happen. And there had been a lot of talk percolating for weeks, really months, about some big NIL opportunities for HBCUs. And starting with Jackson State, I'd been hearing about this, you know, some potential tie-ins with, you know, some of the all-time great NFL players that maybe didn't go to school there but went to other HBCUs or whatever who wanted to contribute. We have talked about on this podcast numerous times, the NIL could be a playing field leveler. And I think without NIL, this probably doesn't even come close to happening.
No, absolutely. I mean, I said this all along when this was proposed. If you listen to this podcast, we've said it for years, that the NIL is not, everyone said, oh, Alabama's going to buy all the players. Why does everyone think Alabama's the only one with money?
Right?
What? Like, everyone's got money. I think Alabama and Georgia and Texas, they'll continue to get the vast majority of the players. Players will go where the value is the highest, and where the value is the highest is the place where football matters the most, and that's fine. But this provides an opportunity in economics. How as an employer, attract talented employees by, you know, leveling the playing field of, oh, you know, you don't sit there and say, well, this company's been there 100 years. This has the best office. They got the tallest building in town. That's some of the stuff. But you sit there and go, oh, man, I'm going to go with this startup. They gave me a 10% raise. And everyone goes, oh, it totally makes sense, right? You pay. Money is the one thing that can,
right.
Yes. Can level the playing, as you said. Now, we always talked about it like, hey, you know what? Money can make having to travel further away from my parents and play at Nebraska or Iowa a better deal. Money can make me say, hey, you know what? If I'm the starting quarterback at Boise State for 3 years, rather than try to fight through being with four other quarterbacks at USC, I can make more money. I didn't think it would level it so much that someone was going to say, screw it, I'm playing FCS. Okay. But if there's enough money, and I don't know, or, I mean, look, the kid wants, he had a very nice statement. You know, he wanted to play at an HBU, it's university, he wanted to play at a historic black university, he wanted to attend school there. Jackson State is FCS, but they had three games this year. Well, they had four that had attendance at home in Veterans Memorial Stadium in Jackson of 45,000 or more, and wow. Three over 50.
Yeah.
It's a big deal in Jackson. It is a huge deal in the African-American community, not just in Mississippi, but now all over. There is HBCU people. I don't care. I talked to an Alcorn State guy today. He's like, yeah, I mean, that's their arch rival. And he's like, this is great.
Yeah.
It won't be so great when this gets smoking your team next year. But so what? Yeah. Like, he has positioned himself and marketed himself as the underdog, the trailblazer. Anybody you know went to HBCU school has immense pride in the place.
Absolutely.
Right. And so there is a link there. And he just marketed himself. He made himself a huge star. If he just goes to Florida State, and that's a big, I mean, the just, right? But it's Florida State. Other than people like us, no one knows who he is today.
Right.
And instead, he is a big, huge deal. And maybe he can make money off it, or maybe not. He's also, like as you said, he is Deion Sanders wannabe, play alike. Well, that's your coach.
Yeah.
So not so bad. I just think it's a tremendous moment, but makes a ton of sense. But this is what NIL can do. I don't think that's why he went there, but it evened out that playing field in a certain way where it's like, hey, I'm not giving anything up by going to be the big star at Jackson State. I didn't think NIL, especially in 1 year, would close that gap that much. I would say in the future, you know, I do not think like the top 30 players will go to 25 different schools in the future. I still think they're going to predominantly go to five or six schools, but I do think there'll be more of this, right? Iowa kept a five-star. Missouri kept a five-star. North Carolina got, I think there'll be more of it where it's like, hey, I can do this.
Oh, absolutely. And I got to say too, just like Deion Sanders is impressing me. All right. They're 11-1 this year. So it's not like he's just, you know, walking around saying, I'm a celebrity. He must be doing some coaching. I'm sure he's done some very good recruiting. He's got his son playing quarterback. His son's very good. But their defense is very good. They're 11-1. They're going to the Celebration Bowl. Coach Prime couldn't be bothered to go to the Celebration Bowl press conference in Atlanta. He sent an assistant coach. But
he's a little busy.
Well, when you come back and say, this is what I was working on, yeah. You know, it's okay.
But, how much press was there?
Yeah. But he tried to get a couple of FBS jobs. Colorado State, TCU. His name was in the mix at both those places. Didn't work out for him. But I say watch out for Coach Prime in the coaching market in the future.
Colorado State.
Yeah, he wanted it.
Now, man, he's already landing the number one players at Jackson State. He don't need to be bothered with Colorado State.
Yeah, it's Coach today's going to be remembered as a fascinating day, I think, when we look back at how college football and recruiting are going to be reshaped. And certainly people who listen to our podcast, you know, we anticipated this. We've talked about this. We knew this was coming. I think we were one of the few places that was pretty consistent about saying, look, it's just not going to stalk the blue bloods. There's a chance to even the playing field. We talked about Creighton and Murray State and some spots like that in college basketball where there's passionate local following. And I echo what was said earlier about the HBCUs. This is a huge moment for HBCUs. I talked to Courtney Gosha, the AD at Florida A&M today. They open with Jackson State next year. And I believe it's the Orange Blossom Classic in South Florida. I said, is that game on TV? And he basically was like, it will be now. you know, and it would have been televised. But now all of a sudden, with Deion Sanders having this buzz and with America wanting to tune in perhaps to see this player who's changing paradigms, we'll look back in a few years, first at Quinn Ewers and what he did in terms of changing the paradigm from the high school level. And then obviously there's going to be a lot of retrospective on Travis Hunter. There will be a lot of thought put to how Travis Hunter's future goes, how his experience goes as a trailblazer. Everything he does there is going to be magnified more. If he has a little success, you're basically expected to be the best player at that level right from the moment you walk in. So any little setbacks, anything that happened, those are going to only be magnified by the spotlight he's brought. That said, it is a compelling, fascinating move, and I really think it rocks the sport in a very good way.
I agree. We'll get to this. I mean, there's all this hand wringing. I mean, it was hysterical. Like, you know, we had the early reaction, and people were like, they paid them, they did it. Like, dude, you got outbid by Jackson State? Okay, like that's good, right?
Jackson State's never outbid anybody for anyone, to my knowledge.
They got it organized, and you know what? Because quite honestly, later on Feinbaum, Jimbo Fisher said what obviously we all know is like these NIL deals have been going on for a long time. They were illegal.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jackson State's now legal, and they can be again. It's a big deal in Jackson, and Jackson is a decent sized city. It's 600,000 people there, And it extends far beyond that because of the HBCU factor and all of that. But it is there's a lot of people in Mississippi who do not want to and will never root for Mississippi State and Ole Miss. That's just that's just how it works. There's a lot of people that still have a lot of pride in what places like Jackson State were when guys like Walter Payton, that was all they'd go to, you know? And so that stadium will have 60,000 a game. And next year, I bet you every home game has 60,000 people at that stadium. There aren't that many places in college football that'll have 60,000 people. How many schools had over 45,000 for home games this year? I mean, four different home games had 45,000 to 58,000 people at the game. A number of them, but not that many.
Yeah, if there's 65, if there's 65 in the Power Five, not all of those.
Right. So next year, forget it. That's going to be a hot ticket. So. Very, very exciting news. But there is this bit where, you know, the world is different. This is they're going to move this signing day. They have to, right? This is absolutely chaotic right now. I would say move it back into the middle of February and then maybe have another one real late or something. I don't know what. But right now you essentially have it'd be like NFL Black Monday when you fire all the coaches the day after the last week of the season, the playoffs starting. So basically the first week, it'd be like having the draft on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the Wednesday after the last game of the season, while free agency is also going on. Like, it's just stupid, right? It doesn't work for anybody right now.
It's stupid on five different levels, at least. You know, I mean, it is. It makes no sense in terms of everything else going on in the sport. It has leveraged up the firing and hiring cycle to a insane degree where now people are, you know, getting fired in the second week of the season and people are trying to hire people in the middle of the season. That's not good, I don't think, for the teams. It has only exacerbated the pretend we're not making staff moves situation where all of a sudden every assistant, like there's going to be, you know, five dozen assistant coaches changing jobs next week because they were waiting. Like if you've got a signing day in February and then Dan, just have the spring signing like that we do for every other sport. You know, have football signing in February, have the spring signing when you can sign for every other sport then for the others. And there would be less hiding who's leaving your school from an assistant coaching standpoint. So yeah, there's a lot of different things.
On the portal and help on all. And it, like, this is a great day for college football. Today was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement and you want to spread that out. So hope springs eternal and every, like, you're trying to sell season tickets and all of a sudden it's like, hey, everybody had a great day today, right? Everybody got who they wanted, right? That three-star boy, that's the quarterback I would have taken totally over those five-star. Sure. Yeah, sure, coach.
Yeah,
you know, but that just the whole thing makes zero sense to have it today. Coaches liked it. Coaches are trying to make their job easier, and I think that's a lot of the complaint about all of this, the NIL, all these uncertainties. They all want, they're like, they got to work harder. This is tough. I'm managing all these things. My thing is, you know, cry me a river. One of the things you found time to manage is renegotating all your contracts. You make $8-9 million a year.
That's right. Like not only that, you also have a bigger staff by like eight times than you used to have. What are all those people doing? They're doing a lot of the recruiting for you, the groundwork, you know? So I don't want
to
hear it.
Listening to Lane and William Christopher Sweeney and the others, Gene Chizik is no longer a coach. I mean, it was just like, what are you crying about? And then you hear, at least to my knowledge, Saban, Jimbo. Jimbo's just like, all right, this is what we got to do now, right? It's total chaos right now. Tampering galore. Kids are being manipulated. Grass is greener and all that stuff, as opposed to putting in the work and graduating. There are no consequences. So now you got agents at NIL tampering. You have no consequences. No consequences equals no conscience. There's no reason for pause. No barrier for young people, like nothing. Education is the last thing now. I won't necessarily disagree with him on that, but that's it. You know, the reason we have a transfer portal is because coaches, when a kid wanted to transfer, used to have the right to deny where someone could transfer. You could deny an amateur athlete, a student athlete, so-called, from transferring to another school. They would have 30 school lists. Some poor kid being from Arizona and he wouldn't be able to transfer anywhere closer than Iowa State. And because of that, they overstepped and then they lost their control. Same thing with NIL. Nobody came up with a rule. So here you go, because you guys didn't get out of your way.
You know what? Physician, heal thyself. I mean, they've had a million chances to get this thing right and they just didn't even do anything. Nothing.
Right.
You know? And so it's really hard to feel sorry for the people who have had all the control for decades. All of a sudden now they're losing that, some of that control. And now it's like, oh my God, the sky is falling. I'm not feeling the empathy for y'all. I agree with you that, like, yes, in an ideal world, it would be great if education were a prime aspect of what these guys are deciding, their major and where they would fit in with that and all those sort of things. Because as we have said a million times, most of them are going to need a college degree and to go to work because they ain't getting an NFL lifestyle. But also, this is the way it is in a sport that is just throwing millions and millions of dollars around. The players are like, wait a minute. Yeah, we'll take ours.
Yeah, this is a natural and overdue reverberation from college football blossoming to a $1 billion business. It's really simple. And if those guys should be complaining about anything, they should be really just in awe that the money didn't trickle down sooner. I mean, it's pretty shocking if you think about $1 billion conference TV networks were created. Schools were paying out, getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, just there's just this massive economic structure. Again, I'm not crediting them, but it is impressive that they created a system that completely cut out the labor for as long as it has. So any, you know, like the fact that Gene Chizik felt no self-awareness about tweeting what he tweeted the other night says all you need to know about how comfortable people have gotten in the old system. And look, today is going to be forever symbol of the new system, is that very likely because of a large NIL deal, the number one recruit in the country went to Jackson State. Like, that's jarring and it's different, and it's, but it's reality and it's good. It's free market. It's America. Here we are.
Innocent people did not die because a guy went to Jackson State instead of Oklahoma State or some other, right? I mean, like, who cares? Gene Chizik, okay?
Let's talk about it.
Every scholarship offensive lineman at UT, he's talking about Texas, will get $50,000 a year with new NIL deal, not to mention $200,000 education. Americans struggle finding $50,000 jobs to feed their children. Next, it's $100,000 per player with no end in sight. Flawed system. Most money wins. Words of Chisholm. Okay? Now, first off, this doesn't make any sense. Okay?
I don't know.
He was getting absolutely flame broiled last night. Well, you know, Twitter is, they're going to flame broil. But look, if you're concerned that there are many Americans who struggle to find $50,000 a year jobs to feed their children, and you're also concerned that some Americans are now finding $50,000 a year jobs, you've completely lost me. What is the problem? If you are legitimately concerned at these people that can't feed their children, what if their children can feed them? This seems like a great thing. We need more $50,000 a year jobs around here. So I'm absolutely opposed to the creation of $50,000 a year jobs. Why? Okay. Then, you know, you just get to the simple fact of 50K wouldn't gotten you into the Hilton Garden Inn with Cam Newton.
That's right.
Which is Gene Chizik's claim to fame.
Oh, yeah. That Gene Chizik one and only good season as a head coach was with Cam Newton as the quarterback after an alleged $180,000 offer from Mississippi State that he turned down to go to Auburn. Okay.
Is Gene Chizik going to tell me that nobody ever made 50 grand playing college football?
Not at UMass,
I don't know
Dan.
If Cam Newton took it, but is this man who supposedly coached in the SEC and the Big 12, coached numerous schools as assistant, is going to tell me he never heard one peep about anyone? Or do we believe Jimbo Fisher says this has been going on for a long time? We just made it legal.
You got to stick to the good old days, Dan, and pass the collection plate around.
Yeah.
I told Pete today about the story in Junction Boys about the Bear Bryant A&M teams, where one of the kids, I haven't read the book in years, but they flew a plane over his farm in Texas, dropped a little bag. It landed. He opened up the bag. There was money wrapped in an A&M flag. This was like 1955 or something. Okay, like, what is Gene Chizik talking about? And then it's, look, dude, you made like $20 million. $11 million of it was to go away because you didn't have Cam Newton anymore.
Right.
And as Pete said, the unbelievable, you know, the TV money, I'll always go back to the, you know, Jim Delaney, the great champion of amateur athletics, taking a $20 million bonus for negotiating a TV deal.
Yep.
$20 million is the Big Ten commissioner as a bonus. And then everyone's going to sit around and go, this damn kid's going to Jackson State.
We can't have this.
Flawed system.
But
good for him. Who are you to look down on Jackson State? I like Gene Chizik. How smart is Gene Chizik?
Can I please just say, too, that Words of Chisholm sucks. So get a better hashtag for yourself, dude.
Oh, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No.
How do you tweet this?
Gene Chizik, who got millions and millions of dollars while being fired.
Never heard of anybody making 50 grand. Unbelievable. The purity.
I still think about Nick
play.
Farrelly in that title game against Oregon. You know, you're like us. You cover enough of these games. And like, you know, they all get distilled into like one memory other than Michael Dyer. Nick Farrelly just ate Oregon alive that day. Oh, I mean, he lived in the backfield, camped there. He was an unbelievable player. He was the best player on the field that day. There was no question about that. He was better than Cam Newton. He was better than LaMichael James. He was unbelievable.
Wouldn't be shocked if he got a $50,000 bonus for his play in that game.
Kiffin looked despondent that people are transferring. Mm-hmm. Sonny Dykes at TCU went the other way. Looks like name, image, and likeness here to stay. Get on board with it. Stay competitive. You don't get it, you don't, and get left behind. I wonder if, like, you know, Clemson's recruiting wasn't great this year. I'm not going to bury that program by any means, but it's like, you know, maybe the effort. I have concern with anybody spending their time shaking their fist at clouds. You know, are you in on this? Because I would want my coach to just be like, all right, new rules, let's go. You know, Clemson signed 13 guys so far.
The criticism today should go to Florida State, which should have one of the biggest, baddest machines of an athletic department of anywhere in the country. Instead, they propped up some political guy who had no business running an athletic department for 3 years, like a fake AD, right? And they have the Seminole Booster Club. Their whole thing is just completely sideways. And they got outflanked by Jackson State for the best player in the country. All right? Like that, all those Seminole boosters should take a long look in the mirror tomorrow and be like, man, we have spent 20 years burying our program into the ground. If we can get outflanked by Coach Prime and Jackson State for the number one player in the country, we haven't put together the infrastructure. We haven't had the insight. We haven't had the leadership to get our act together to compete for the best players in the country in whatever way they got them. I was like, that should cause some soul searching. And that's above too. Like, a coach can't go out and do that. I mean, I guess Coach Prime can, but at a place like Florida State, they should really be, they shouldn't be looking at Mike Norvell and blaming him. They should be looking in the mirror and saying, we've been doing this all wrong for 20 years. We have terrible facilities. We have no infrastructure. And we just put a vacant guy in leadership for a while. And we're still just treading water in irrelevancy.
Put a vacant guy in leadership. Tried to go get Vince Tyree, who's a career businessman who had a mediocre athletic director career at Louisville. Then he turned him down, and then you promote the dude from Seminole Boosters, and Seminole Boosters just got their ass kicked by Jackson State. So things are going great. No
like
wonder I didn't see on Twitter.
To nothing. Like yeah. They should be. They not only lost, but they got taunted, and Coach Prime took the spear and the horse and rode it back to Jackson.
Seminole on Seminole crime, man. Bobby Bowden used to do a lot of signing day flips, man.
He did.
Bobby Bowden was good at the end, boy.
Oh yeah. He can close.
He's just charming people. You know, I will say this, but you don't, like, they did get outflanked. I mean, there's no question. It should have been wrapped up. But it's not necessarily that kids are going to sign with the highest bid. If there is a bid, it's also like, just you sit there and say, well, I don't know about going to Jackson State, this, that, and the other thing. You go, well, I'd really like to go, but it's and then you sit there and say, oh, I'm going to make enough money that I can follow my passion here, right? Like, hey, this is pretty good. And they could actually, he's whatever they could have given in dollars at Florida State, he's a bigger star at Jackson State. Just right. Is. Yeah. And I know that doesn't make any sense. But, like, there's a reason there's kids on TikTok you've never heard of making more money than Academy Award winning actors, because it's just the way the world works now. He's a bigger deal because of where he went. Maybe he just really wanted to play for Deion Sanders and go to an HBCU.
Right.
And now, because of the money, he doesn't have to sit there and miss out on anything. And it's like, hey, I'm going to do this. Like, when you're 18, how much money you need? I don't know how much he got. We don't know. And whatever's promised, we'll see. But if there's, we don't know. It levels that playing field. And I just never thought even for one player would level it this far.
And it did quickly, like year one. So it's amazing.
It should give a ton of, the people whose ears should perk up and should be planning are all the schools that aren't the ones I'm about to list, which is your top 10. But it's your UCFs and it's your Cincinnati's. And it's your TCUs and Texas Tech and Boise State and Fresno State. They got to be sitting there saying, wait a minute, Jackson State pulled this off. Now, that's a unique situation. We don't have Deion Sanders. But how do we get it set up so that that player says, hey, I can be a bigger star staying home. I don't have to just go off. And you may not be able to be Deion Sanders and pull off, I'm going to beat the entire SEC for the number one player. but can you be big enough to beat some of the SEC for the 45th best player? And that's where this thing spreads it out. And that's what I think is coming. I still think most players will go to the biggest schools, but some, and it just, it's a little bit. And that's why I never thought it would just be the rich get richer. That said, number one, Alabama. This is per Rivals. Number right. two, Georgia. Number three, A&M. Now,
yeah,
I think 24/7's got A&M first, whatever. Those are the three that a little separated. Texas closed huge. And that's not even counting Quinn Ewers, who they might be number, I don't know what they'd be if Quinn Ewers had just never gone to Ohio with a ski mask on and taken the Buckeye money. But he did. Ohio State's fifth. Penn State, let me just get through the top 10. Penn State's sixth. Notre Dame, seven. Michigan, eight. North Carolina, nine. Sully, Volunteers.
Gritty Vols.
Gritty Vols. Pesky Vols. They closed. Good job. Of that list, go ahead, Pete. What stands out in this group? I think, you know, there's a few schools, but of that top 10, one other stat that Sully has, SEC signed 17 5-stars. Everyone else signed 12. I actually thought it'd be higher.
Yes. This is the happiest the happiest Sully's been since Tennessee led Georgia at halftime in 2020. One of the great moments in Sully crushed optimism. We neglect that we did not get you, Sully, the halftime champion of the SEC East, because that banner would have hung nicely next to like your U.S. men's soccer team polo shirt in your office. Here's what I think. Like I called around to a bunch of people today, just what they thought of signing day and what's happened, and you know, some of the Texas A&M surge. Clearly, the people who could manipulate NIL the best ended up sort of being the chatter of the day today. And so I heard it was interesting. It was just like a variety of different perspectives. And here's an interesting thought, all right? And I'm not saying the NCAA should go investigate name, image, and likeness. But like any rule, there has to be some sort of guidelines, right? Guardrails, as they call them, whatever it is. And there are rules. They're largely being ignored, as most NCAA rules are. But like, I'm just curious of both of your perspectives of how much should this stuff be legislated? Should they just let it rip or should they pretend?
Well, my thought on that is the toothpaste is out of the tube and like all over the sink at this point. I don't know really how you're going to put it back in. The problem was, as we have discussed, when they had a chance to set up a framework for this, they failed. And they kept putting it off and kept putting it off. And finally, all of a sudden, last July 1st, they're like, okay, we have name, image, and likeness. What does it mean? Well, we're not really sure. It's not paper play, but we don't really have a defined set of what's allowed or disallowed, who can be involved, when they can be involved. We kind of have an idea, but we don't really know. But go ahead, it's legal now. And so, boom, everything just goes crazy. And now you're going to have to try to rein it back? That's going to be hard to do. It's just classic NCAA legislation here.
They had a plan, Pat. Yeah. The United States Congress is going to solve it.
Right.
L-O freaking L. I mean, who the hell asked the Congress to regulate them? I don't know what you can do. You make the rule. The NCAA has no ability, funding, size to hire the number of forensic accountants necessary to try to do this stuff. I mean, they can't figure out, you know, basic stuff. They never were able to catch people before. They can't. There's just no way. There's no way. You ban athletic departments and coaches from setting up the deal. You ban them from saying, this is the deal right now. You can't go to this kid and say, hey, look, we're going to give you $1 million. I got a friend who's going to give you $1 million. All you can say is, hey, look, our last quarterback made $1 million. Or $100,000. You ban the coaches from speaking that way to recruits because recruits will rat out coaches. And you ban coaches and athletic departments for having that kind of direct communication because you might be able to find emails and text. But other than that, they just don't have the manpower to try to solve the problem. And at the end of the day, who cares? If you're looking on the macro, if you're the NCAA, you're looking at the macro, which I know nobody wants to do, but it's like, because everyone cares about their own piece of the pie, their own team. But a bunch of kids signed scholarships today are going to get scholarships. They're going to go play somewhere. We're going to have some games. Someone's going to win. Someone's going to lose. And that's it. And if all of a sudden some of the winners aren't the ones that were winning before, oh, well, it's not your birthright to win 10 games a year or win the national. If the teams that are losing before are still losing, oh, well, that's just how it works. Like, we don't have to, what are we trying to micromanage here? It's college football. It's not the NFL. It's not a hard salary cap and a reverse draft position where like UMass would have gotten the best player, right? That doesn't how it works. You don't get the best schedule. It's always going to be a free-for-all. It's always been a free-for-all.
Did you guys watch the Memphis-Alabama game Tuesday night, the basketball game?
I did, yes.
Yeah. I did.
And Dan, you were watching it, right? Like,
I did.
That's a prime example of where we're headed here, you know, or could be headed if resources, leadership, et cetera, are mobilized, you know. Now, again, Memphis hasn't been that. Memphis could be their own podcast, their basketball team right now.
Memphis got good but, when they put their NIL guys on the bench.
That was a pretty cool moment the other night. Yes. Yeah. No. Right.
When Imani Bates didn't play, they were bad.
They got really good when the money guys didn't play.
Yes. But just the notion of like, but why did I flip that game on last night? Well, I flipped it on to see those. I flipped it on to see a little bit of the train wreck. I'm not going to lie. But I also flipped it on to see the two potential lottery picks, you know, playing college basketball. Like, in a, you know, in maybe a they're not on Tobacco Road, they're not in Westwood, they're in a bit of a non-traditional place. Now, Memphis has great tradition, don't get me wrong, but it's not the bluest of blue bloods. And those are the places where the gritty can go find their advantages. And that's what Jackson State did today on signing day. And we're going to keep seeing snapshots like that from now on.
One of the biggest college basketball stars, biggest college sports stars of the last 20 years is Steph Curry. Steph Curry is one of the reasons he was such a big star was not because he played at Duke and Kentucky. It's because he didn't play at Duke and Kentucky, right? Yep. Everyone talks about the epic tournament run of Steph Curry. They only made the Elite Eight. They won three games, and they almost won the fourth. But everyone remembers it because it was something different. Now, Curry's got a lot of charisma and a great game and so many other reasons, but part of it was Davidson, you know? So there's just a lot of options out there. All right, but for the actual recruiting, because this shapes who's going to win the national championship. Thoughts on this top 10? What class stands out for you as notable here in that top 10?
Sully, this just in, the Gritty Vols have been hopped for 10th in the Rivals top 10 by Kentucky in football?
In football.
The Wildcats, best recruiting class they've ever had in terms of the rankings, and the one that put them over the top, 4-star with Rivals, 5-star with other people, Keontae Goodwin, 6'8", 305. He's an interesting story. When he was younger, he was 6'8", like 400 and some. Okay, so kudos to him. He went to work with a personal trainer and just shed tons of pounds, probably more than 100 pounds. Got himself in much better shape. Yeah, so happy to see that. But things, hey, it's recruiting. Things get strange, okay? He's from Louisville. He all of a sudden ends up across the river in Charlestown, Indiana, which I covered high school football in southern Indiana. Charlestown, Indiana is not where prospects are from. Like, what are you doing there? That's not a place that's won anything ever. I would hazard to guess, unless demographics have changed greatly, that he doesn't fit in demographically with a lot of the rest of the student body there. And then he goes to do this, the talkies show. He flies to Dallas, presumably from Louisville's airport, since Charlestown's just across the river. Shows up for this big stadium show there and says, I have no announcement. He took the plane flight, which I don't blame him. He took the free chips. I don't blame him. And then said, quality, I got nothing. Chip. Said, you know, I'll announce tomorrow or not today. But then by the end of the day, the pressure starts mounting. It's down to them and Michigan State making a late run. And Keontae Goodwin stays with his original commitment to Kentucky and boosts that class. That was another only in college football signing day story.
That was a big get for them. The Taki chip. Yes.
What are those chips? I've never heard of
them. It's like a corn tortilla.
Yeah, it's like a Flamin' Hot Cheeto with a little
but
lime.
They have different flavors. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
The Taki. So, yeah, the kid had a sponsored announcement and then announced that he wasn't making an announcement. Which,
yeah. Right.
I actually brought more attention to Taki's chips.
He did.
Than if he had just said Kentucky.
Right.
Right. So it was actually a pretty sharp move because all of a sudden the Taki's billboard was everywhere. but yeah, it was an excellent announcement. I have no announcement.
I've talked about this in the pod before, but I flew to Pittsburgh to go to Terrell Pryor's announcement that wasn't an announcement at Jeanette High School. Like, I remember showing up, the gym was packed, and he announced he wasn't going to announce anything. And I was like, oh. Well, just go home. It's a nice It's a nice February day in Gannett, PA, though.
Jim Calhoun, the basketball coach at UConn, when he was at Northeastern, he told me he once scouted a player. I think he drove to like, I don't know, I think it was like somewhere in New York. And he had driven all the way down there from Northeastern in Boston. And he's, you know, this is back in like the 70s or something. There's no video of these guys. You don't know. And the kid's in the layup line and he looks pretty good. And Jim's sitting there and the kid went up for a layup in the layup line or a dunk and came down and sprained his ankle. It was out for the game. And Calhoun said he couldn't leave because he thought it would be rude. And so he had to sit there and watch this basketball game. And finally get in his car and drive 5 hours back to Northeast.
That's kid's probably trying school. To dunk, impress the Northeastern coach. You know,
Northeastern's here.
I got to do better than that CW Post offer. I'm going to.
I couldn't leave. I've been rude. I don't know if the parents are looking. God damn it.
Yeah, that's probably the days back before you can't even just sit there and scroll through your phone either.
You had to like watch this terrible game that nobody else was any good. He's like, maybe there'll be somebody else. There wasn't. Yeah. anyway, Pete, your thoughts on the top 10?
So I guess of the most interesting schools in the top 10, I'm going to go with Michigan. They sort of barnstormed there. They had a bunch of big flips today. They flipped a receiver from Notre Dame out of Louisiana, and Michigan's kind of cool again, right? Like that, they've always recruited well under Harbaugh, and they've it's never been poor. But you could feel a different type of momentum off of this season, and you could feel the reverberations from that younger coaching staff, that more energetic coaching staff, that staff with Mike Hart and Ron Bellamy that's tied to the state of Michigan. It all kind of came together for Michigan today. And, you know, they're eighth in Rivals as we tape right now, 3.46 star ranking. The days of them getting like random two stars out of Connecticut are likely over. And it just seems like there's more of a plan there. They shook up their recruiting staff. It was overdue. It's nice to see Michigan kind of popping on that level again. North Carolina's behind them. We all remember that Mack Brown was Mr. February at Texas before he won a title. I guess now, like next year, after sort of sputtering through these last two seasons, he'll have to prove he's not Mr. December.
Yeah, Michigan got three top 125 Rivals players just today. Wow. They got a very good junior. They had another four. Like since they beat Ohio State, it's on.
Yeah,
and very interesting. I would guess Michigan has a very good recruiting year next year. Michigan's one of those schools. It's a great place to go and sign, right? It's a great place to go to school and play, but the program felt dead, and now it doesn't.
I was just gonna say, in terms of long term reverberations, one win meant more. That Michigan beating Ohio State might have meant more than any other single result this year.
That probably true. Yeah. I mean, Harbaugh said, feels like a new beginning. And he kind of he's not introspective. He didn't kind of backed off. He's trying to make it sound like something else, but you could tell it was like, hey, you know what? And all of a sudden, boom. I'm going to go with the Texas schools. I mean, no offense to Alabama and Georgia. They had incredible classes and loaded up on players, but this is not a stunning. A&M 24/7's got them number one. Rivals has them number three. They signed two 5-stars and 19 4-stars. They could have more coming. They landed big time top 100 players from Pennsylvania, Florida, Tennessee, Arizona, and somewhere else. Maybe Georgia. Jimbo Fisher has got them in that mix with Georgia and Alabama. And that is very hard to do. And I think I wrote a column about Texas A&M, and I've always, every time I go to Texas A&M, I'm always like, how is this place not just dominant? They have not won a national title since 1937. Like, not, they didn't even claim a title when everyone was claiming them. They haven't won a conference title since 98. They're never that good. But you go and you're like, man, look at the stadium. Look at this. Can't, like, the facilities, the location's pretty good. If you know, it's a college town, but Why isn't this happening? And it never happened, and now it all of a sudden looks like it might be happening. So I thought that was huge. But then Texas comes in too, and it has a monstrous day. First up, they got Ewers coming, but they signed two really good players. They signed like five guys. Like they signed like 10 guys in the last week, including, you know, a five-star offensive lineman from Houston and another really good offensive. I mean, they're all line loaded up. Great defensive back. They killed it in state in the last week. Sark, I mean, that was a terrible season, dispiriting season. The most exciting thing that happened was when an assistant coach's former stripper girlfriend bit monkey, bit a kid. This team has lost to Kansas. And you know what?
Did you see the Christmas decoration? The front yard decoration?
The North Pole assassin. That was so great.
Yeah.
I love our listeners because we got that sent us like 62 times. Yeah, all of them made me chuckle.
Yeah. Whoever came up with the North Pole assassin with not just the, you know, female elf and a monkey thing, but then I get somebody in a Texas coaching shirt sitting there with a headset on. I mean, it was like chef's kiss.
Remember that old bit, Real Men of Genius? It was like, yeah. I don't know what
that was. A man of genius, or woman, or whoever. Yeah.
Right. The person who invented the taco salad. So it sounded like they're eating a taco, but it's really, or salad, but it's really just lots of terrible food in the taco. But anyway, incredible the horn. So A&M and Texas, and presumably these two are going to play when these kids are on the field. I mean, how long is Texas going to stay in the Big 12? How many more seasons? But they're loading up down there in Texas.
I really feel like the Texas schools, from what Lane Kiffin was intimating, perhaps, and what I've heard just sort of buzzing around today, are among those on the front lines of being aggressive about name, image, and likeness. And if you're going to create something, if you're going to do it on the last possible day after studying it for 5 years, and you're going to do it with essentially no specific rules and guidelines, like, kudos to the people who are just going to go take advantage of it. You know what I mean? Like, just they're just going to go out and they're going to use name, image, and likeness as a weapon until they can't anymore. And if there's one thing we've learned about the NCAA and its vacant enforcement department, it's count on them to do nothing. Like, that's what the one thing you count on them is to fail and to be impotent, because they've been like that for decades and they'll continue to be. So there was some smoke from Mark Emmert that they're investigating name, image, and likeness stuff. Like, in Texas, they're erring on the side of aggression. And history will tell you that's going to be a smart move.
Sure. I mean, right now it's like, oh, well, we didn't, that's not the way we interpreted the rules. So we just gave everybody, you know, $250,000. So, oh, sorry. we'll work on doing it differently next time. Yeah. What is the enforcement staff going to do? I said earlier that the toothpaste is out of the tube and all over the sink, man. It's not going back in.
Other really good notable classes, perhaps. Arkansas is 12th. Fighting Sam Pittman's did really well in recruiting.
Yeah.
Mississippi State's 13. That's pretty good. Brent Venables kind of saved the Oklahoma class, ended up 14. Auburn had a bunch of flips at the end. They're 15. It's like they're 18th in the AP poll always. But yeah, that's kind of where Auburn
is. You know what? I did think of you, Dan. I was looking at the men's basketball poll the other day, and Auburn was 18th.
There you go. Stanford, David Shaw has had a bad run on the field. The 16th best class per Rivals, the ruins of poor Florida State.
He's still recruiting to Stanford, right? Like, you're going to do okay.
Those kids,
there is a subset of guys that you can get, that's for sure, that are good players.
Yeah, they're going.
But also are good students, yeah.
Yeah, they're going.
Let's get Stanford good again. That was fun when they were good, with like three extra offensive linemen and Toby Gerhart gashing in the middle and Christian McCaffrey.
Intellectual brutality.
Yeah.
Oh, they were so physical.
They were fun to cover too. Like, they were great. Like, you know, great interviews. Andrew Luck was an all timer. But like, even dolts like me could go to Stanford and write a good story, because the kids are so, like, they're so much smarter than me, quite frankly. That, you know,
just I wrote one about their
easy copy
behind their stadium where the locker rooms are, the opposing locker rooms. You come out of the opposing locker room and you have to climb like these two long flights of like outdoor stairs to the team bus. It was like the final insult to injury. You got bludgeoned by Stanford for 3 hours, and then you came out hobbling. And I did this column once on all the Oregon players, like, just
you did. I remember
dragging their legs up this like 100 steps. Like, my God, that's, come on, man. Anyway, Florida State 17, Missouri 18, Michigan State at 19th. It's It's kind of where they usually finish. Not too bad. 22 kids they signed. They see how hard they work the portal. They did a tremendous thing by offering an honorary scholarship to Tate Meyer, the football player from Oxford High School who was murdered at his high school. I guess earlier this month, I told that story how he wanted to be a Spartan. Did not go on his unofficial visit because he had already promised Toledo that he would go on an unofficial visit to them. And that just unbelievable character statement to me, especially when you're 16 years old to have that kind of person. But it was nice for Mel Tucker to do that. He said he had talked to the family, didn't want to do it without their permission. And, you know, and then he also took time in a statement to mention the other people who passed away. So that
one of the one of the people they signed to was from the transfer portal, Jalen Berger, the Wisconsin transfer, had a very good freshman year and then fell off the map last year. And if I could say one thing, like I tweeted, you know, the tweet of Jalen Berger going there and said Mel Tucker's back in the transfer portal. The number of, I would assume, Wisconsin fans who came out of the woodwork to rip this kid as a terrible kid, like, who are you? What are you doing? Like, is that really your purpose on earth? The kid left your school. He transferred, and you want to now assassinate him for showing up at Michigan State? Don't do that.
The people tweeting at and Instagram posting these high school kids, get it together, people. So anyway, that's some bit. Not a ton of other huge ones. LSU 27th. Brian Kelly had 13 commits at this point. You know, it's a tough situation. They kind of fell apart. We'll see how much that hurts them. Even one recruiting class got hurt in the SEC West. But he'll be fine long term. Like I said, Clemson's at 29, Ole Miss at 31. It's the Clemson Ole Miss. I just watching the attitude of William Christopher and the Lane train just made me be like, I don't know, man. Like, does that translate into your work? This is your job. Sorry, you feel bad for you. Why am I feeling bad? Like, get your ass and figure it out.
Well, I can't, like, Lane Kiffin, of all people, who's always prided himself on being the cutting edge, you know, wiggle your way around and find a way. I'm too clever for everyone. Like, for him now to be on the other side, like, this is ridiculous. That's a comeuppance or a change.
How about Vanderbilt at 33, huh? Clark Lee, first year. That's awesome.
Sully, didn't you also, you had produced a graphic showing that like 1 through 7 in the Big Ten East was all the East.
Yeah.
And 7, 8 through 14 was all the West.
I don't know if it's stuck that way. I haven't looked at the final Big Ten rankings, but yeah, it was at one point it was absolutely chalk if you split the two divisions.
That is wild.
Yeah, Vanderbilt would be above every single Big Ten West team, by the way. Pretty wild.
Wow.
Hey, good for Clark. Yeah. Did you guys go on any of these Twitter spaces the last couple days that have been roaring and ripping? Sully?
The FSU one scared me. I went in there for about a minute,
it was amazing.
What was it? It was like the Fire Mike Norvell one?
Yep, players were jumping in on that thing. FSU tight end came in and like had to support Norvell. And then you have a legacy player, Al Blade Jr. from Miami, jumping on there and said, yes, keep him as long as you want. Like,
wow.
It felt like there was an FBI like was also monitoring. And I just didn't want to be involved. Like it was the desperate and the despondent on there. I was like, okay, I don't need to be on this.
So it's like it's like a message board come to life. Like it's like an audio message.
Yeah, it's like, why do I need this?
Just what we need. Yeah.
not the world did not need this. It's not an invention. Florida only had 10 recruits. Obviously they got coaching change. Got a big flip on a Notre Dame safety. I think they'll be all right. Some other weird ones. I do not understand the recruiting tactics here. UCLA, just 12 kids. It's like, are we trying to field? Like, how many guys do they even have on this program?
They were going to have a small class. I do know that.
Were they?
Well, they did.
That was
Nebraska.
Thing about UCLA is you can't like run kids off. Like, it's a little bit like
nobody will leave.
BC runs into that. Stanford runs into that. Like, if you go to school there, you're not like, oh, I'm going to go to Bowling Green and like, you know, chase Mac Glory. It's like, no, I'm going to get my $500,000 degree and go work.
That is the problem with like Stanford and UCLA and places like that. Yeah. It's like, you're not going to play that much. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm cool. Good. I got LSATs coming up. Nebraska could use some players. You'd think.
You think?
13 recruits.
Yeah. They were last in the Big Ten on the graphic that Sully had. I don't know if they still are.
I'm sure there's a strategy.
They better win the portal or next year's just going to be, well, I think I'm predicting next year's going to be bad, but they could be really bad if they don't win the portal.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess some of these mid schools aren't signing a lot of kids and just, they're going to go portal, but which isn't a bad, if I'm Nebraska, I'm raiding the MAC. Like that would be what I would be doing. But I also would think, gosh, you got to be able to get more than 13 kids, right? I mean, it's all hands on deck.
Right. Because now, isn't there a cap on transfer guys at 7 now?
They have to regulate.
I don't think there's a cap on transfer guys. I think that rule is like a little bit more nuanced. You can take 20 if you want. I feel like you can, if you lose 7 to transfer, you can replace 7.
Okay.
That's what I feel like. They gave it more flexibility on the hard cap, generally. That's... I've drilled down on that hard cap stuff for stories before, and it's more complicated than our pedestrian mathematical educations would allow us. But just because then you can start throwing in gray shirts and blue shirts and everything, right, and it gets right.
Yeah.
So the more the players hate you, the more players you can bring in.
Yes. The big complaint is from like Stanford and Wake Forest and place, they say it doesn't incentivize you to like build a program like the old fashioned way. Bring guys in, redshirt them, grow them, develop them.
Right,
it's
right.
Just more like Yahtzee, and then you say shake up the dice again, Yahtzee.
That's a very good analogy. I like that.
It is Thanks. Total free for all. There's no question. Speaking of that, let's look at some guys. Obviously, Quinn Ewers is going to Texas. If this kid is, we've talked about him. If he's as good as he is, as they say he is. I mean, he had those two great handoffs at Ohio State. Excellent footwork.
Million-dollar handoffs, Stan.
Million-dollar handoffs.
You laugh.
He should be the number one recruit, but, you know, and he could factor into what Arch Manning's going to decide for next year. South Carolina grabbed Spencer Rattler and his two cars. Coming to Columbia, they also had a decent recruiting class, 21st. Shane Beamer, the unexpected darling of the SEC right now. He's kind of like the less folksy version of Sam Pittman. Just out of nowhere has a big year. But that's pretty good for South Carolina. I mean, we just said, I mean, they out-recruited Clemson this year.
Yeah.
I wonder
when was the last time that happened.
Yeah, if it's time to take advantage of that state now.
Clemson had more talented players. So, you know, just the fact you sign more guys, you move up on the list. I mean, that was the one thing. Clemson didn't just gamble on an LSU. They didn't just grab people they didn't need. They'll wait. They'll get their guys. So, but good run for South Carolina. What do you think Spencer Rattler can do there?
I don't know, man. Hopefully for his sake, you know, he learned from a very humbling season, two seasons really. He's going to drill down on what he needs to do to get better, because a lot of people loved him as a prospect coming out of high school, but he was not that lovable after 2 years. So, you know, I mean, I hope he does well there, but he's got a long way to go. He may just, you know, look, how many guys have we seen that just weren't that good, that we thought they were that good? They get billed as that good. They're not that good. You remember Hunter Johnson, who was at Clemson and transferred then to Northwestern and couldn't win the job there. And I think he ended up at a third school. And it's just, you know, some guys just never quite pan out the way they're supposed to.
I think Spencer Rattler's interesting for a couple of reasons. One is that it gives Shane Beamer's program a distinct identity. When you flipped on South Carolina this season, you knew Shane Beamer's team would play hard, and they had a couple, you know, decent players on both sides of the ball, but there really wasn't a distinct identity. There was no reason that compelled you to flip that on if you weren't a Gamecock fan. Now, if they open their season on Thursday night in the SEC network, we're all going to want to watch to see what happens with Spencer Rattler. Like, there's a variance here. It could go well. It could go poorly. So, but there is, like, it is put an adrenaline shot of relevance into this program that it hasn't had in a long while. I mean, they're just with him there, they're far more relevant than they were under Will Muschamp, pretty much at any point. They had like one nice 8-win season or whatever it was. The second part of this that's really important is that Shane Beamer had the most unusual of turnaround jobs there. They were actually pretty good on the O-line and the D-line, but they were really poor at the skill positions, especially defensive backs and wide receivers and what he inherited. So if you're trying to build going forward and you have a deficit in the skill positions at receiver, you can get some dudes who can play with Spencer Rattler now. Like, he can spin it. So I think that helps address multiple weaknesses. They didn't have a quarterback. They basically took like a manager or a trainer or, you know, Zeb Nolan. They were scraping through the GA room to find guys who could take snaps for them this year. So it addresses one distinct weakness, but it also gives you a bridge and a path to addressing other weaknesses.
Yeah, he's certainly got a chance to be an upper half quarterback in the SEC. Which, if you're South Carolina, is what you're kind of looking for, to say the least. Just wrapping up a couple more guys. Michael Penix is heading to Washington. We'll see what he can do. Bo Nix is out on the transfer portal. Emory Jones from Florida is out on the transfer portal. So that's part of why the SEC is wild. We'll see where these guys end up. Do they leave the conference? I don't know.
Max Johnson also from LSU.
That's right. Yeah, his brother just signed with A&M. So does he go and join up at A&M?
Zach Calzada from A&M's on the portal.
Zach Calzada's out. Enter the portal. Everyone's in the portal. That's it. So it's going to be a free-for-all. It's going to continue. Again, I highly encourage college football to not try to stage a playoff, fire all their coaches, have their signing day, and have free agency at the exact same time. Hey, that's just me. It's fine for me. I just sit here and talk about it, but I would be pulling my hair out as well. I'd look as dazed and confused as Lane Train.
Yeah. We're in the chaos business at the end of the day on this podcast, and I think people come to us for the chaos and the satire.
It's actually
of the chaos.
Too much chaos.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is.
I know. We're overloaded. Leaving a lot of chaos on the cutting room floor here today, which kind of annoys me, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to it next time. Appreciate everyone listening. Part two of the bowl preview will be out early next week. The games will begin this weekend. We already made our picks. Go back to that. It's quite a quite an experience.
Yeah. Friday at noon, baby.
Friday at noon.
Yeah.
Oh, the Bahamas Bowl looks awesome. There's been videos of both teams like playing beach volleyball.
Sweet.
Like, God, the Pete's point, like I would tank for that bowl game.
Hell man. Yeah.
How are we not covering this? I'll cover that.
Yeah.
Sully, why aren't we live potting from there?
Live potting. Sully, come on, Sully,
what are you doing?
I know. I let us down.
Sully, look, Florida, Caribbean, Hawaii, get us a live pot in one of those bowl
certainly
locations.
We're not going to Indianapolis for the title game, so we should have gone to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
So you whiffed on getting us to the Bacardi Bowl in Cuba in the 30s, all right? And you still haven't made up for it.
Yep. Oh, we gotta love it.
Sully is gonna give a Dabo-type speech, you know? Like, nobody cares about the joy of podcasting anymore. There's no reason for pause, no barrier for young people. We're being manipulated by scenes of the Bahamas. Podcasting is the last thing right now. No consequences. Broken system.
A podcast truce. Dan's going to learn how to pronounce Dabo's name. And Dabo's going to stop yelling at clouds. All right? Is that a good truce?
Be a great truce.
No, I'm enjoying it the way it is, honestly.
We might need Henry Kissinger to pull that truce.
It's not a real word. It's not a real word. Dab boy. That's it. It's not his name.
That's why you go with William Christopher quite often.
Yes. All right. This pod's got to end before we commit an NCAA violation. Even there are no rules. Broken system. Gene Chizik screaming at clouds. Continue to subscribe. Share us on social media. Leave us nice reviews, not bad ones. And that's it. Talk to you later.